Lester, and thanks for joining us for this edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. My colleague Andy Eubank will stop by in just a few minutes to provide grain market analysis from this holiday-shortened week of trade. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin shares his Indiana farm forecast. When will planting season really get underway across the Hoosier State? And C.J. Miller will help me bring you the news today, including updates from the State House as the Indiana legislative session starts to wind down, a planting update from Northeast Indiana, and a message for motorists this planting season. We begin today's show with an update from Indianapolis, where there were some long nights in the House and Senate chambers of the State House as legislators are trying to put a bow on the 2025 Indiana General Assembly. Several big news items from this week. First off, the grain indemnity bill is headed to the governor's desk. We'll tell you about that later on in the show. Secondly, the recently released revenue forecast predicts that the state will have a $2.4 billion budget shortfall over the next 3 years. Of course, that has a significant effect on the budget that's being written right now during this session. The legislature will have many decisions to make, given that education and health care are such huge pieces of that state budget. And then third, Senate Bill 1. We gave you some updates on this last weekend, and that bill has now been signed by Governor Mike Braun, but not without some controversy. Braun signed the bill Tuesday, saying on X, quote, "Today I signed historic tax relief for Hoosiers into law. Nearly every Hoosier, homeowner, farmer, and business owner will benefit from tax cuts, reforms, and stronger taxpayer protections," end quote. The bill will provide some relief for farmland owners by changing the formula for farmland assessments. In calculating the assessed value for farmland, the capitalization rate increases from 8% to 9%. The bill has had its detractors, though, and in the end, one of them turned out to be Braun's lieutenant governor and Secretary of Agriculture, Micah Beckwith. For more on that, here's C.J. Miller.
Well, I had the chance to chat with Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith on Monday morning about Senate Bill 1. Beckwith told me he was disappointed that Indiana's farmers and farmland owners won't be getting nearly as much property tax relief as what was initially set forth by State Representative Kendall Culp. Ultimately, Beckwith had this message for Indiana farmers regarding the bill.
I'm sorry. I mean, I think that's probably the big one right now.
Beckwith also told me that he changed his mind about the bill last weekend after the feedback he had received.
I've been hearing from Hoosiers all over the state, especially the conservative base, and they were livid. And they were letting me know. They were like, this is not the fix. This is not what we've asked for. This potentially is going to hurt us.
Even though the bill would provide up to $1.4 billion in tax relief for Hoosier homeowners over the next 3 years, the bill provides only one-tenth of that savings, or $140 million in tax relief, for Indiana farmland owners.
It's not all bad for farmers, but I just think we can certainly do better. And farmers have given us a lot of grace. I mean, I've talked with Farm Bureau. I've talked with Don Lamb, our state director, does a great job. And they get it. You know, they're not screaming bloody murder in the State House right now, but they are saying, yeah, we're disappointed. There's a little bit for us, but we wish there would have been more. And so I'm not done fighting for more. I know the governor's not done fighting for more. We'll continue this fight.
The main point of contention that Beckwith says he's received from Hoosiers is that the bill introduces a new local income tax, or LIT for short. Indiana cities and towns that have a population of at least 3,500 would now be able to impose a brand new income tax up to 1.2% beginning after December 31st of 2027.
I wanted to see property taxes come down, but now what they're doing is they're saying, okay, fine, then we'll give you the property tax decrease, but then we'll also allow the cities to be able to really hit you hard on the LIT if they want to. Now, there's an argument that if local communities want to elect people that will raise the LIT tax, should they not have the right to do so? And there's an argument there. And I'm a home rule guy all day long. So if a Fishers, Indiana wants to screw over their constituents and just tax the living daylights out of them, okay. Well, Fishers, vote in different leaders in your community. But I don't want to make it easier for bad city officials. And again, it's not every city. So I know if you're a city official right now, you're listening to this, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so offended right now. The lieutenant. No, not every city is a bad actor. Unfortunately, there are some bad actors, though, out there.
Check out my full conversation with Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
Thank you, CJ. Again, more from the State House coming up later on in the show, other farm news as well. And Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast is coming up on Hoosier Ag This Week. Right now, let's turn our attention to the markets. This holiday-shortened week of trade, the markets were closed on Friday for Good Friday. For the market analysis, let's welcome in Andy Eubank. Andy, happy Easter.
Thanks, Eric. You're a good egg, and happy Easter to you and your family as well. Since there were no markets on Friday, we'll start with a quick recap of Thursday trade. Corn down 2 cents on the May, 482 and a quarter. May beans down 2 1/4 at 1036 and a half. And May wheat, 548 and three quarters, up a penny. June live cattle up $2 and June lean hogs up 7 cents. At the end of trade, I did check in for some thoughts with Brian Basting. He is at Advanced Trading. On Thursday, the final day of trade in the Easter weekend, shortened week of trade. And Brian, it was hard to get any momentum going, especially to the plus side for the grains and oil seeds. What did you make of trade throughout the session?
Thanks for having me, Andy. Yeah, I think it was just more marking time, for lack of a better phrase here. As we approach a three-day weekend, the market is looking at a wet weekend for many. We'll see what the actual rainfall totals end up being. But not only this weekend, Andy, we're looking ahead now to the next week, the week of April 21st. Most forecasters looking for additional rainfall this week. So it may be stop and go, particularly, unfortunately, for your listeners there in Indiana and parts of the Eastern Corn Belt. Monday afternoon, 4 p.m., the USDA will give us the corn planting progress report. The five-year average for April 20th, Andy, is 10%. Now, last year, we were a little bit quicker. We were at 11% last year. I don't think we're going to reach either of those levels on this this time around, although some areas were going this week. I don't want to say everybody was shut down. Some areas are going, but for beans, their five-year average is 5%. Last year was 7%. We may be approaching the average. I did hear more folks going after the beans initially because they've seen results. But in terms of the markets, Andy, we're looking at good export sales of corn reported on Thursday, continued to be the primary shop in town here in the U.S. We're looking at some very competitive prices relative to other suppliers. Indications, Andy, that maybe from the Black Sea, specifically Ukraine, and to a lesser extent Russia, supplies aren't quite what we thought they were and below USDA estimates. So maybe as we enter spring and early summer here, that even gives the U.S. a stronger foot in the door, if you will, in the export market. But again, looking at the markets, more or less just seeing what the rainfall totals will be this weekend, looking at any latest tariff developments as we come in there Sunday night and start the markets up again. But more or less positioning evening ahead of a three-day weekend here, Andy.
It would be nice to get to a point where we're paying a lot of attention, maybe most of our attention, to the planting progress and forecast, which is typical this time of year. But there are those outside elements like tariff discussions.
You hit the nail on the head. I think all of us would like to get this settled one way or another. We'll see what the administration has in mind going forward here. But as producers, we want to accept the fact that uncertainty is going to be a fact of life with us in the markets. We want to look for ways, Andy, to turn uncertainty into opportunity, though. Anytime you see this type of volatility in the market and you do get opportunities, we've had a nice rebound in the corn market here the last week or two. If that were to continue for a variety of reasons, you really want to look at turning that into opportunity and defend your balance sheet. So always look at uncertainty in the markets and how to turn that into opportunity. But I think that's just another ingredient, if you will, for price volatility that we've thrown into the pot here for 2025. And it's going to be with us for a while until we get that settled out. But it's an interesting environment, Andy, because we've got inclination to strong inclination that we're going to plant more corn, weather permitting, the next 30 to 45 days here, and less beans than a year ago. But that's far from carved in stone. We'll just have to see what the weather looks like the next few weeks.
Brian Basting, Market Analysis. Brian at Advanced Trading is available at 309-664-2314. I'm Andy Eubank. Much more still to come on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Times are uncertain in agriculture today. There's no farm bill. Trade tariffs are looming, and the property tax debate is a mess. There is one thing you can depend on. Hoosier Ag Today is here to keep you informed. with all the information you need that's vital and relevant to your farming operation. Even if it isn't good news, you'll hear it here first at Hoosier Ag Today. On air, online, and at the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Plenty of moisture around for this weekend across the Hoosier State. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's weekend weather outlook. As we look through this weekend's outlook, we're starting with moisture, but also seeing drier weather come into a large part of the state over this upcoming week. So I think we're going to be able to talk about planting a little bit more in the days ahead. But clearly, not today. And not tomorrow. We have showers and thunderstorms trying to work into the state. The best chance for strong thunderstorms seems to be downstate here today. And as we move into tomorrow, we're probably going to be seeing another round of moisture lift up from the southwest. Once again, chance of showers and thunderstorms, but this time the best thunderstorm potential seems to want to be lagging farther west near the Mississippi River. Moisture over the next 2 days combined. And this goes into probably Monday morning to midday. Looks like a longer tail as the cold front is slowed ever so slightly sweeping through. But today, tomorrow, and through Monday midday, we're probably looking at anywhere from a quarter to 1 inch of precipitation. The only place I'll say probably a little more in far southwest Indiana where we can see better thunderstorm potential. I also think that we're going to be seeing better or higher rain totals in central and southern Indiana than up north. Up north, we might be able to escape with an inch or a half an inch or so. Now, through the rest of next week, as we said, we're going to try and dry things down. Clouds break up Monday afternoon. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday even, not much happening. I guess I won't rule out some pop-up scattered showers here and there, but we're in the warm sector, so this is just going to be, dare I say, heat-based. I don't think we're going to be that warm, but we're going to be warm enough this upcoming week. And then we get late in the week, Friday into Saturday, Sunday. That's when we see better organized frontal boundary trying to work in from the west. Could see a quarter to three quarters of an inch of moisture there, especially on Saturday. Following that, we are dry to start the week of the 28th. Have a major low, though, coming out of the Nebraska-South Dakota area into the western Corn Belt. Significant moisture source with this coming off the Gulf. I think we can see several days of very strong thunderstorm potential next week. Right now, leaning toward Tuesday, Wednesday, the 29th and 30th. But I won't rule out action lingering into the 1st and 2nd. I do see a drier pattern emerging over the continental United States, though, as we head toward the end of that week. So May 2nd, May 3rd should start to dry down a little bit more. Then looking at that first full week of May, that's where it gets a little interesting here. I think that dry pattern that we alluded to holds. Most moisture, if it pops up that week, will be coming out of the southwestern United States and southern plains. And right now, at this time of year, we don't see a big chance of that kind of action hooking north-northeast. So, again, that's why I'm thinking drier, at least below normal precipitation. Any moisture should be limited to a day or two. Good evaporation the rest of the time. I'm Ryan Martin.
Season-long sulfur availability can be a reality for your crop when you apply Micro Essentials from Mosaic. Micro Essentials contains two forms of sulfur, sulfate to satisfy early season crop demand, and elemental sulfur to feed your crop throughout grain fill. Micro Essentials is the mighty micro supercharging your yields as much as 3.4 to 6.5 bushels per acre over commodity, MAP, and sulfur blends. Contact your local ag retailer and ask for Micro Essentials from Mosaic for season-long sulfur.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and cold, wet weather has kept many farmers across the state from already starting their spring planting. But I did speak with one farmer from Fort Wayne who told me he's hoping to get seeds in the ground this coming week.
You know, the struggle here on an Indiana spring in northeast Indiana is real.
And that's Don Weiss, a corn and soybean producer from Allen County. He's also on the executive committee for the United Soybean Board.
We're ready and have the equipment all hooked up, ready to go out the door, like a lot of the farmers in this area. But I think at this point, likely will be next week at this point, depending on what Mother Nature gives us in the line of rain and moisture.
And that rain and moisture has already been the first big issue this year.
We had the rivers here in northeast Indiana out of their banks, and so the soils are drying out now as we've had a few days here with not much moisture, but we received a couple, three, even some isolated cases higher than 3 inches
out of that rain event that went through last week. And so we're still drying out up this way in a lot of places.
We says the second issue has been the cooler temperatures.
We're watching that because we have cover crops on our farm and we're looking for active growth before we try to terminate those here to get ready for planting. And temperatures still with these cool nights have been, as far as soil temperatures, you know, keeping them in the low to mid 40 range is what we've seen so far.
So what advice does Weiss have for other corn and soybean producers across the state?
When we look at the calendar, it's still early yet. We can do a good job, and we've had to work through some wet springs in this area of the state the last couple of years, and in the end, we've had overall average to above average yields. So today's equipment is set up to take advantage of the window of opportunity when it's presented. So just wait for that soil to get into the right condition and have at it.
Check out my full conversation with Fort Wayne farmer Don Weiss. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, as the poultry industry is being hit with a bird flu outbreak, America's pork producers are sounding the alarm about preventing an African swine fever outbreak.
It has been discovered in the Dominican Republic, which is way too close to the United States.
And that's Jackie Ponder from Johnson County, one of the newest members of the board of directors with the National Pork Producers Council. She says if pigs here in the U.S. were ever to test positive for African swine fever, it would have a crippling effect on the ag economy.
It's scary. And that's why we are pushing to renew and expand a lot of items for the animal health portion of the Farm Bill. And that's the National Animal Health Lab Network, the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program, the National Veterinary Stockpile, the National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasure Bank. Those are things that we need strengthened so that if anything does happen, we can react quickly.
In addition to pressing your lawmakers for more funding for research, Ponder says more needs to be done to stop people from bringing in infected pork from outside the U.S., which includes permanent funding in the next farm bill for the Beagle Brigade.
Some of the things people bring in, it's not for nefarious reasons. They go back home and they visit family and nobody makes this dish just like mama makes it. And so she puts it in a Tupperware container or whatever, and they put it in their luggage. And the thing about the beagles, when you see them at the airport going through luggage, they're not looking for drugs. They're looking for meat. I saw a demonstration at Pork Expo last year in Iowa, and it's fascinating to see them. They can tell if it's pork or any other meat. They alert to it, and people don't understand that bringing that raw meat into the United States can bring disease.
Check out more of my conversation with Jackie Ponder with the National Pork Producers Council. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. And on your next visit to the Indiana State Fairgrounds and Events Center, you may notice a brand new sign and a brand new name atop the historic Coliseum. It's now known as the Corteva Coliseum.
This building has a soul to it. I mean, it has this incredible way of making memories for people.
And that's Cindy Hoy, Executive Director of the Indiana State Fair Commission. She says the partnership between Indianapolis-based Corteva and the Indiana State Fairgrounds and Events Center ensures that the historic venue remains a cornerstone of the state's celebration of agriculture.
One of the things that Corteva talks a lot about is community. So what a better place for the story of agriculture to be told than here at the fairgrounds in the Corteva Coliseum.
Audrey Grimm is Chief People Officer with Corteva. And she says the Corteva Coliseum reflects their company's commitment to Indiana's agriculture community.
It was a natural partnership for us to come together and to really celebrate agriculture today, but also play a role into the future of agriculture.
In addition to hosting the Indiana State Fair's livestock shows and special events, the 86-year-old venue has also hosted the Beatles, President Kennedy, and the Indiana Pacers during their ABA championship era. Hoy says the Corteva Coliseum holds a special place in the hearts of countless Hoosiers.
The Corteva Coliseum really is an anchor to this fairgrounds, this 250-acre campus, but it's an anchor institution in the community, too. I mean, it's memory-making, especially for families.
In fact, having grown up in Indianapolis, Hoy told me that the Corteva Coliseum also holds a very special place personally for her and her family.
Believe it or not, we used to host championship tennis in the building, and I was a ball girl 1 year. I've skated in the building. My son has, my grandson has. It has all sorts of little, again, exclamation points for myself, too, and how many memories that our family has made in this building in particular.
Check out the photos from the special ribbon cutting and open house that was held earlier this week at Corteva Coliseum. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Coming up on Hoosier Ag This Week, you'll hear from ISDA Director Don Lamb as he shares some tips on how to keep everyone safe on the roadways this planting season. Plus, some safety tips regarding those Easter eggs this weekend. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
The data is the data, right? When we look at that 59% of dogs overweight, similar stat in cats. How is the animal feed industry responding?
We see a shift in the industry toward more fresh, nutritious pet food. But looking back at the history of pet food industry, we see very interesting evolution. The pet industry started with kibbles or dry food that we call just feed the dog. They are made with the lowest quality of ingredients and something like dead or dying animal bodies. And these days, lots of pet owners are aware of these problems.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. Senate Bill 461, the Grain Indemnity Bill, passed through the Indiana Legislature this past week. The bill provided updates for the Indiana Grain Buyers and Warehouse Licensing Agency. It was a priority bill for the Agribusiness Council of Indiana. President and CEO Bruce Kettler.
A lot of our members are the licensees that are affected by the regulations, the rules that the Grain Buyers Agency operates under. We're pleased to see it. We know that there were changes that needed to occur. The legislature made that clear. The result of some lawsuits made it clear.
Lawsuits like the one in Huntington County precipitated by the foreclosure of Salamone Mills back in 2020. The bill made its way through the House and Senate with little pushback from legislators.
A lot of the changes won't directly affect farmers. They will affect more of our ACI members directly because there will be changes in what's accepted for an audited financial statement. There'll be changes in the procedures that the agency uses if there's a notice of deficiency at a licensee. So it more directly affected will be our ACI members or licensees that are involved in being regulated by the agency.
Kettler says the process of writing this bill goes back to June of last year when all ag groups came together to work on this collaboratively. He says they didn't always agree on every last point, but they wanted the bill to be positive for all of agriculture. And he thinks they accomplished that.
Not only for the elevators and the folks that are buying grain, the licensees, but also for farmers, because obviously we want farmers to have a lot of opportunity for their markets and ability to be able to have different markets that they can take their grain to. And so it was a good effort on behalf of everybody to make it happen.
Hear more from Kettler about the grain indemnity bill and other bills they were watching throughout the session at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, it's all fun and games until someone gets sick. Happy Easter! Yeah, you might be coloring and decorating eggs with your kids and grandkids this weekend. How can you avoid getting sick? Here's CJ Miller.
Meredith Carruthers is a food safety expert with USDA, and she has a few tips to keep in mind to keep everyone safe this Easter weekend.
In general, when you're handling eggs, as you're taking them from the refrigerator to boil them, really important to wash your hands after you've touched those eggs, especially before they're cooked, and even after they're hard boiled, per se.
She says this will keep your friends and family from getting sick from a foodborne illness. She also says when handling food, including Easter eggs, keep these four words in mind: clean, separate, cook, and chill.
If you're going to be eating the eggs that you use for Easter activities, keeping in mind things like the 2-hour rule, because it's unsafe to let those hard-boiled eggs stay out for more than a 2-hour time frame, and not eating any eggs that have been outside for an Easter egg hunt are all important.
As far as eating those hard-boiled eggs?
If you are boiling your eggs, keeping in mind too that hard-boiled eggs can be safely in the refrigerator and consumed for up to 7 days, so not hard-boiling them too early, per se, and boiling them closer to when your festivities are going to happen.
And what about when you dye those Easter eggs?
There are some food coloring or egg dyes that aren't safe to eat, per se. So making sure that if you're going to plan to eat them, that you're getting a dye that is actually safe to eat.
If you have questions about food safety, visit the USDA website, ask.usda.gov. I'm CJ Miller.
Thank you, CJ. And planting season is officially here. That means Hoosier motorists need to be on the lookout as you share the road with Indiana's 94,000 farmers as they move their large, slow-moving equipment from field to field on rural roads and highways.
We love to be in a field. Farming is great when you're out in a field doing the work. When you have to get back out on the road and move from field to field, that's when the blood pressure goes up a little bit.
That's Boone County farmer Don Lamb, who's also the director of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. He urges drivers to be patient as wide farm equipment like sprayers, tractors pulling planters or tillage equipment, and large trucks hauling ag products take up most of the road and often travel at speeds no greater than 25 miles per hour.
We're constantly looking in our rearview mirrors. We're constantly wondering if somebody's on their phone, if they see us. Even with all the flashing lights, it's so easy today to be distracted.
Lamb encourages motorists to be careful when passing and not pass in a no-passing zone or within 100 feet of any intersection, railroad grade crossing, bridge, elevation structure, or tunnel.
Farmers get pretty good at looking ahead and really looking for those areas of a road that are good to pull over. You know, sometimes there's a deep side ditch and we just can't get over at that point. Sometimes there's telephone poles, there's mailboxes, there's culvert pipes that go underneath the roads and we can't drive across that culvert pipe. So we're always looking out ahead, trying to find the very best place to meet. So sometimes it just takes a little bit of patience for everybody to slow down just a little bit and find that spot. And we'll try to get over as quick as we can. And I know people sometimes feel irritated when they get behind farm equipment, but as soon as we can find a safe spot, we'll get over and let them pass.
Join us here at Hoosier Ag today and our friends at Keystone Cooperative in sharing this safety message throughout the planting season on our social media page at Hoosier Ag Today on Facebook and X. Thanks for joining us this weekend. Do stay safe out there and happy Easter. He is risen. We'll be back next weekend, same hat time, same hat channel. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.